Welcome to the Expanded Podcast with your host, Lacey Phillips. As a leading manifestation advisor with a process that's, well, radically different from the old New Age model, mine is rooted in psychology, neuroscience, and my energetic gifts. Therefore, I created this podcast to help you expand your subconscious limiting beliefs about the potential of deserving the manifestations you're calling in. In each episode, we'll walk through my expanders, a term in my manifestation formula signaling the people that already embody, have, or are successful in what we are looking to call in. These are the people that we witness through our mirror neurons on a subconscious level that expand us into knowing that our manifestations are possible as well. Especially when we hear about their background, their upbringing, their trials and tribulations, and any of their pitfalls that they had to experience along the way. Therefore, you're tuning into this podcast series to show your subconscious that anything you desire is possible. And by pressing play, you've already started the process of manifesting it. If you enjoy this episode, please leave us our review, comment, and share it with your fellow manifestor that's struggling or could really benefit from the information that you're about to learn. So the block I want to get into today and address is the whole trigger of laziness. This is huge. Many of us in society were programmed that we're lazy if we're not constantly working or hustling or going after what we want. And we see these deadlines or these road checkpoints in life. If we don't achieve this by this amount of time and we're just hanging out and doing the things we love, then we're lazy. And this is super problematic when it comes to magnetism. I was just talking to my hairstylist about this last week. This is a trigger for him. And what I really want to say about it is, number one, you need to find out your authentic code, period. You need to find out the four elements that make up your authentic code, and you can do that in Uplevel, all three of the workshops inside of it, the rut. You can do it inside Rock Bottom, and you can do it inside Next Level, whichever you're at. You're in a rut. If you've kind of been in a rut, just sort of, you know, in a funk for the last 4 months or more, you're in a rock bottom. If you got earthquaked, your total security got pulled out from under you recently, and everything you knew to be okay and your worthiness has sort of been robbed. Or you're Next Level if things are flowing along, you seem to be manifesting with ease, you're in a good place, that's when you're wanting to take it to the next level. All four of them teach you your authentic element. Everybody's unique. And here's the deal, when you figure out your authentic element, there's no real such thing as laziness when you're in flow with your authenticity. It's impossible. So for the person who feels super guilty about binging TV or, you know, having self-care or taking a day of total rest, when we can get very clear on our authentic code, the four pillars of it, mind, for example, it's not crazy that I teach manifestation, and you learn in there that where we lacked in childhood a lot tends to help define what our true authentic elements are today. And so mine are luxury. And to me, that means freedom, like having enough security, financial security to be as free as I want, to enjoy the things I want, when I want, how I want, totally free. So luxury. Two is being seen. So being able to teach, be seen, heard. That's number two. Two things I didn't receive when I was younger. Three is work, my legacy. So leaving behind this work. And four is definitely my self-care spiritual practice. And there's a whole series of prompts and all sorts of stuff so you figure out yours inside of there. When we know ours, it's all about anything that aligns with those are in flow. So for me, for instance, self-care and nurturing my spiritual practice, all of the stuff that I listed before, like rest days, self-care, binging TV shows, whatever I need to do, that isn't lazy. And also you have a form of that inside of you as well, whether it's nurturing family or, I mean, everybody's is unique, but you have a form of that too. So when we can really lean into our authentic code and get rid of everything that isn't our authentic code, we create massive magnetism. One of those happens to be learning the art of totally doubling down into our authenticity and knowing that we don't need to dog paddle, you know, where it's not needed. So rest days that are in alignment with our authentic code, self-care, checking out, going out and hanging out with friends, if you're somebody who gets that through connection. All of that isn't laziness. In fact, when you're doing it and it's in alignment with your authentic code, what you're communicating to the universe and projecting is, I'm so worthy of this time that you're going to send me more of it and in abundance. So I really want you to just reframe the way that you're finding yourself to be lazy. Now, if you're somebody who's using all of these forms of escape to deter and procrastinate on what you know you need to be doing. So meaning the person who's just checking out, playing video games, or always out shopping or drinking, overeating. These are forms of escape. It means that we're actually really out of alignment with our elements of authentic code, that we're trying to escape all of the things the stresses and pressures we have to do that aren't aligning with our authentic code. That's why we're finding forms of that serotonin boost. Social media can be a version of it. Something that's going to pump us up when we're feeling so low because we're stuck in literally a rut that doesn't serve us, that isn't in alignment with what lights us up. So I really want you to reframe laziness. If you know your authentic code, which you'll find an up level, and you start to line your whole life up with it, and you enjoy those rest points, you're actually incredibly magnetic because, again, you're communicating, nah, I don't need a dog paddle. Everything I want's coming. But you can't fake that. You need to align with it. So I want to share that. I think it's a really important trigger, especially while we have the holidays. We kind of get this like pass to enjoy and relax and rest and enjoy family. But that can be all year long, and you can manifest a lot more of that lights you up and makes you happy. So that's my note for today. Today's guest is Max Kingery, which his real name is Frederick Maxwell Kingery. It's my fiance. We thought it'd be really fun to bring Max on because it's so funny. It boggles my mind that I'm Googleable. I'm a Google search. But when you do type in my name, I think it was like the third search word that comes up or phrase is Lacey Phillips' fiance. And I was like, well, I guess people are curious about him. And so let's bring him on. So that's one point why we brought him on. It's really to expand people through how we met, like our bumpy, rocky start and how I used the formula on him and he called me in. So that's one point of it. It's a relationship expander. Secondly, he's really, really fascinating because he has always known what he's wanted to do in fashion, starting lines, ever since he was tiny. And so he has learned all of the ropes. He's private labeled. He's really versed on clothing lines and fashion that a lot of people were requesting more designers and, you know, people that are creative and have entrepreneurial businesses in those realms that I thought he could serve as a perfect expander for that person who is creative and entrepreneurial. And then thirdly, you would find him very expansive if you are struggling with addiction, if you are navigating sobriety right now, if you're deep in recovery. He has been through it all from a rock bottom heroin addict to getting sober to now being sober and giving back to his community for quite some time. So I figure he's a pretty big expander. You guys will really enjoy him. We are pretty honest and funny in it. And yeah, kick back. You're going to love this episode and enjoy meeting my very mysterious Virgo fiance who does not even have social media because he loves to be mysterious. Let's expose him to the world. Enjoy. So I'm so excited to have you on the podcast because you are like the ultra Virgo with no social media. You love your privacy. You love your mystery. So having you here is already so exciting. And I can't thank you enough for opening up.
Yeah. And I'm completely flattered. And I'm also a little bit insecure, too, because this is way past my comfort zone. And it feels, you know, I've done podcasts before and I've really enjoyed them, but it feels like a whole nother layer of being vulnerable, mm-hmm. especially because it's speaking to this audience that so intimately knows you. And I've been able to maintain like a kind of a safe distance mm-hmm. while being supportive and, you know, completely impressed about what you guys are up to, but now I feel a little bit exposed. And it's this like intimate audience that you have, and you guys are doing such amazing things. And you know, now I'm here. I'm out behind the woodshed, kind of.
So we're grateful. And I think so many people listening can resonate with that, who are equally, I think one of the biggest, truly the biggest blocks, and I'm not saying this is yours whatsoever, but for the person listening, of why they can be expanded through that, one of the biggest blocks to truly following our dreams, especially in things like career, is we're so afraid of how we'll be perceived, or we're so afraid of being seen. And so the fact that you're even willing to get out of your comfort zone and beyond this is so inspiring for anybody who's sitting there that equally feels that sense of like, I just want to stay private and unknown, or you know, they're not the same things, but thank you for being honest and sharing that.
Yeah, and I think it's really amazing the lies that our heads can tell us. Like, there's this invisible audience in my head that's against me, that doesn't support me, that I'm scared of. Mm-hmm. And, you know, these opportunities to kind of come forth and face that and be in a position to do that with confidence and support. It's challenging.
That leads me to my first question, I think, that can be very helpful, is how do you reckon with or push past those voices of fear, or those voices of doubt, or not good enough, or limiting beliefs?
Well, I think that it's been a really challenging thing. And I think it goes back to just like the fundamentals of my spiritual program, which is, you know, I have to have faith. Mm-hmm. I have to have faith to get up out of bed every day and kind of go about my day in pursuit, you know, of the things that, you know, I want to accomplish. And I think your question can be challenging because some days I'm able to do it and some days I'm not able to do it. Sometimes that voice in my head really dictates how I go about my day in fear. Sometimes I'm able to, you know, change the track in my head, the self-centered, the scared, the self-loathing. I'm able to kind of like reset that. And that's just due to spiritual work, which is kind of helped me have develop a connection with a higher power and you know, be able to calm that voice and that lie that I can tell myself, which separates me from other people, which separates me from doing the things that I want to do in life.
I think this is a really good point to let the listener know, because we cosmically profile, as you say, around here, that Max is a double Virgo with the Sag rising, and he's a manifester in human design. So
I'm really proud of that, too.
He is, and he's actually one of the few manifestors I've met who truly lives his design.
I'm really proud of it.
To the point where I'm always like, ooh, like, you are so fearless about following every impulse, being polarizing. You don't care who you offend.
I do.
Well, I mean, it doesn't limit you, because that's what limits most manifestors.
Well, I'm glad that's your perception, because sometimes it's not mine.
Oh, good.
That's really encouraging, and I'm flattered.
Holding that vision for you.
Yeah, no, that's great. I feel like it reinforces it. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, when we talk about the cosmic stuff, I love it. I mean, I do, because I really identify with those things, and it's weird because I do kind of have these impulses in one way, which is a dangerous word, but in another, it's like this, you know, compulsion to do things. Mm-hmm. And it's fun because for me, it's really a driver. You know, it's like, it's this thing that, you know, whatever it may be, it comes up in different ways in my life. But I'm so grateful that I have a drive.
And you have these systems. When we met, it wasn't like I had to force systems on you. You were totally intrigued. You already had your different forms of spirituality that you were practicing along with the program. But what I really think is so fascinating, because the systems, really, I identify with them. Like, most things are in my chart. And when I first met Max, I called on Dani Beinstein. All of you guys know of her. She's my astrologer, my psychological astrologer.
Shout out to Dani.
Max has also worked with her, and like so many of the things were in the chart. She was like, he's going to be great. He's ready for a relationship. He's not going to be the dad who's wearing like the baby Bjorn at the circle for classes every morning. He works really hard.
Yeah.
He's very driven. He has addiction in his chart. Like a
yes,
lot
I
of
do.
Those things.
Through and through.
I mean, there hasn't been one person I've talked to. Addiction's very heavily in your chart of something you've had to experience in this lifetime.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's there. It runs in my family. It's just, I know to my core that I'm an alcoholic, and that's something that I've had to, I don't like the word deal with, but that's been apparent ever since I was a teenager. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm just one of those people that when I have a drink or a drug, I can't stop. Mm-hmm. And I was able to get sober through the rooms of AA, and that completely changed my life. Mm-hmm. Before that, I had virtually no spiritual program. Like, I'll laugh sometimes and look back on it. Like, I definitely had like a green smoothie or two and went to a yoga class, but I was also a heroin addict.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, it was, you know, it was there in spirit, but I had no capacity in any way whatsoever to be able to actually have a spiritual practice in life.
Are you willing to talk about your sobriety journey just in the very first part? Because I think that that's such a hard thing for the person who might be sitting there listening who is struggling with addiction, that whole potential of like, oh man, getting sober or detoxing or going to treatment. Can you talk about those and how your failures and your successes in a nutshell?
Yeah, I can. And it can feel a little bit uncomfortable talking about that because I do really respect the traditions of AA specifically. So I'll do my best without trying to, you know, kind of break tradition of anonymity. But yeah, alcoholism, I have a very interesting relationship with it. You know, it was kind of the household religion growing up. My dad is a recovering alcoholic. There's plenty of recovering alcoholics in my family. So it was always there growing up. I used to go to AA meetings with my dad, be in these, you know, a mixed meeting in, you know, the hate districts of San Francisco, and it'd be like, what, you know, what is really going on here? It'd be these cool stories and this room full of people that seemed kind of strange, but that's where my dad went. And growing up, it was there. I remember having conversations with my dad, and he'd be like, hey, by the way, you might have this thing, this alcoholic thing, like you should really do your best to stay away from drugs and alcohol. And I was like, yeah, sure. You know, I remember him having a conversation about that. And I'm like sitting in the front seat of the car with my skateboard, like just, I mean, with my hand on the door about to leave. And he was like, hey, by the way, you know, you got to be careful. You know, this runs in our family. And it'd be like, ugh, you know, see you later. And I mean, from that point, I think I was going into the bushes to go smoke weed 5 minutes after that conversation. Mm-hmm. And after that, it was just, it was on. It's something that, it's a progressive disease. And I demonstrated, you know, that once I started drinking and using drugs, I couldn't stop. And it just got worse and worse and worse. And I'm one of those people that I never had a social drink. If I had a beer, I would feel immediately intoxicated, and the things that would ensue were out of control, criminal, everything. Mm-hmm. It was chaos.
And you started using at what age?
11.
Mm-hmm. And then when did you finally get sober?
I got sober when I was 23.
Mm-hmm. And how was that tiny process? Not tiny process, but that like that chunk of your life
for the that chunk of my life
who's there questioning sobriety right now.
It took a long time because I remember I had mentioned that, you know, the writing was on the wall for me, and it took a very long time to understand that was the most critical issue in my life. Mm-hmm. Like if you sat me on the couch when I was 21 years old and strung out on heroin, I could have given you 8 reasons why my life wasn't working out. And the fifth one would be the fact that I'm a maintenance drug user. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I lived in a perpetual fog that alcohol and drug addiction creates for people, and it was almost impossible to see through it. Mm-hmm. And so coming out of that fog was extremely painful because, as an alcoholic, that's how I survived. Mm-hmm. I, for whatever reason, you know, I didn't really understand how to do life. Mm-hmm. And living with the human condition that we all had was I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. And so I don't want a, you know, war story or brag. I'm a garden variety. I'm not special. Mm-hmm. I'm not cool. I'm just somebody who is susceptible to alcoholism and drug addiction, and it's something that I treat on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. And that's something that, you know, it's, you know, AA and my sobriety comes first.
Mm-hmm. Totally. So here's what we're going to pivot into. The big pressing question everyone wants to know is, do you do my work?
Well, the honest answer is no.
And explain why, because I think it's a really great thing for people to know in relationships.
Well, I think that it helps us maintain security in our relationship, at least for me, mm-hmm. because I'll say this first, that not only am I supportive, but I'm also just shocked at what you've been able to accomplish. And it's been so inspiring to see it secondhand and experience this and see like what's going on with people that are doing the work and the meaningful things that's happening in their lives. I mean, it's really powerful.
It's amazing. Thank you.
You know, but being your partner, I have had an instinct, and maybe it's wrong. You know, maybe I need to reevaluate that, but I've always had the instinct that this is something that you're kind of creating, right? And it's this process that's evolving and becoming so powerful that I don't want to form judgments about it. Mm-hmm. I have an open mind to it. I believe in it. I've seen it. Mm-hmm. There's evidence to it. For some reason, I feel like being your partner, if I were to start to kind of like get involved and then, you know, maybe kind of form an opinion about it, it would start, because that's a characteristic of mine, mm-hmm. right? When I see things, like I really have to, like, you know, kind of get involved or form an opinion, or, you know what I mean? Kind of, you know, or maybe even challenge it. Mm-hmm. And so it's been very special to see it. And just let it be, mm-hmm. and let it be this process, and let it be, you know, something that, well, it doesn't belong to you now mm-hmm. anymore. Mm-hmm. You're sharing it with so many people. But it's been really powerful to be a witness.
And also, I think the really important thing, like the cut-through thing that you always say is, I don't want to date my therapist.
Yeah.
And I think that's so important for couples to know who yeah, are in totally. These types of professions. Like, you don't want to be analyzed all the time at home. It's like...
No, I just want to be your equal.
Yeah. And I think that that's really beautiful. So it's a great boundary, I think.
Yeah. No, I think it's really special in the relationship to, you know, have an even keel. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a, you know, fortunately, it's like we both have our spiritual program.
Totally.
And where they overlap, they overlap. And that's great. I wish there was more of that. Sometimes, you know, it's a reality and sometimes it's not. But I think that it's been, when that comes up, you know, I wonder, it's like, am I being offensive? Or is that not supportive? But if I was honest, I think that I mean it in every sense of the word, that I think it's the best way to be supportive of you mm-hmm. and to what's going on.
Totally. I respect it. I totally respect the boundary. And I think by osmosis, we both pick up on each other's spiritual practices. You've introduced me to so many wonderful ones. And that's the next question that they have. Aside from the program, what are your spiritual practices? Because I know that that's your main. But you do have other things that you imbibe in as well.
Oh, I mean... Yeah. And I think that, you know, my spiritual practice is, well, this is almost sounds kind of contradictory to what I just said, mm-hmm. but I mean, I'm down. I'm trying to be an open book. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't have any more ideas. Every single day, you know, my spiritual program is growing from the concept that I'm open and I'm willing. Mm-hmm. All I know is that, you know, it's critical for me that, you know, I pursue spirituality in any which way I can. And, you know, when I find myself recoiling from something is when I'm living in fear. Mm-hmm. And so my spiritual practice, I don't know. I mean,
what are some of the tools and practices you've been
using?
Well,
you know, I love my breath work.
Yeah, you love Max. Loves. He's like every Sunday night at Yogala. Shout out to Yogala because you love it. It's down the street. You are like doesn't give a shit what's going on.
Yeah.
He's there.
Yeah. No, I just think it's great. I really do. And half the time I go, it's not always this, you know, prolific experience, which makes me think about it too. It's my spiritual practice. I'm just practicing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm just trying to show up. I'm trying to show up in any which way I can, in any capacity I can, whether that's, you know, in the rooms of AA, or whether that's breath work, or whether that's going into one of those deprivation chambers.
Oh, you love those too.
Yeah, I do. You know, I really like sensational things like that.
That's
cool.
Yeah.
It's cool. But it's also kind of a lie too. The idea that, you know, I need to go into a deprivation chamber to have a real meditation is a lie that I can tell myself. And it can also take me away from it, because the reality is I can go in the room next door, close my eyes, and practice meditation.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need to go spend, you know, $30, $40 to go into a meditation chamber mm-hmm. to do it. I have the capacity now to practice my spiritual program whenever I want.
Totally.
So I do like those. I mean, they're fun.
Yeah.
It's cool. I get excited when I talk about those things, because it's fun, and I'm grateful that I have the capacity to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that I attribute that to, you know, when I have willingness, because
mm-hmm.
that's really important. The moment that I go, yeah, I'm not going to do that, my day usually is a little more complicated and a little more painful, to mm-hmm. be honest.
And you also have your crystals in your car. You're doing your Reishi and all your cordyceps these days. Like, talk about all of your favorite tools right now that you're using.
I like to experiment. And I'm, as you know, just because I put out a mushroom collection, I'm having a real moment with mushrooms. And, you know, it's fun. It's cool. Mm-hmm. I really do believe in the power of mushrooms. And I got to be honest, like, I've been doing Reishi, lion's mane, cordyceps, chaga, I'm forgetting one, and I feel great.
Yeah, you love it.
I really do.
You love the witch brand.
I shout out to Paul Stamets. He's a very cool guy.
Yeah.
And he was also really inspiring. Well, I was working on the mushroom collection when he did that really phenomenal podcast with Joe Rogan, and I was just like, oh,
yeah,
it was so cool.
One.
Yeah. I was like so deep in the wormhole. So that was really fun. And then right now I love my vitamin C and my B12.
You like the lipospheric, for the people who are curious.
Because yeah.
it's the quickest to absorb through the
bioavailability is apparently much higher. And it's cool too. When you take that B12, you can like smell it on your skin. And when you pee, it's like, whoa.
It's so strong.
Yeah, it's fun. It's very like sensational.
And people wanted to know if you were like this before me. And I'm going to say absolutely. Would you say that your dad and mom were really big expanders for you in self-care and spirituality?
Yeah. When I look back on it, my dad's been doing acupuncture. I mean, he's an OG. Yeah. I think he's been doing it since I can remember. He's all about it. And my mom, yeah, I always tell you that story about when she was doing the green juices, mm-hmm. and she gave me one, and it was like parsley and all these like heavy green goods. And I took a sip of it and just threw it up all over the counter in the kitchen, like instantly.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's funny because when you point that stuff out, like it's so easy for me to forget.
Mm-hmm.
It's so easy for me to forget. But yeah, it's totally true. It's totally true, and for that, I'm grateful.
Absolutely. And you grew up in really spiritual places like Portland and basically San Francisco and Marin. I mean, you were always immersed within cultures that, and now LA, that are very open to spirituality and self-care.
Well, that's all I knew at the time, so it's hard to see it. But yeah, it's definitely.
But you certainly weren't that way as a teen. You grew into it in your older years, right?
Yeah, well, my teenage years, I was a juvenile delinquent. Mm-hmm. I was just a criminal.
Mm-hmm.
So I was very much removed from that. And as I got older, I mean, it came back in spades.
And then another big question people have, and I'm curious to hear your answer on this, you know, because I have my own thoughts, but how can I introduce my husband to more deeper work without it looking like I'm ramming it down his throat? May it be spirituality and self-care.
That's really challenging because for me, there's resistance when you are first into something. I'm a big proponent of leading by example. And I honestly think the more that you try and influence people, the more that they're going to recoil from it. Mm-hmm. I mean, everyone really has their own journey with those things. And, you know, it can be really challenging. I'm really sensitive to that. Mm-hmm. When people are saying, like, this is what you need to do, it can cause me to kind of recoil. So I think leading by example can be really powerful about just kind of, you know, letting people witness what kind of effect it's having in your life. Mm-hmm. Can be really good data or really good information for somebody to go out of their comfort zone.
Yeah, I agree. I think that is really the best way when it's not you that I'm trying to force to do something new, which you're always.
And it's there. I mean, I did my hars. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I did my hars after I heard you do it today.
Yeah,
the
true.
Odds of me doing that today were low.
And
because we're in transition.
He's talking about the Kundalini Har prosperity meditation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think I think that Kundalini is so cool. I really do. And I'm scared of it. Like, or I am. Like, we just opened a store in Venice and I see the folk going down the street. There's this part of me that's like, it's like watching the cool kids go by at school where I'm just like, dude, they're so about it.
They are committed.
And, I respect that. I love to see people in such pursuit of spirituality. I think it's so cool. I really do. But I'm not there yet.
No.
I'll do the hars.
I'd support you if you went like full white.
You would?
Yeah, I mean, if you went there.
Yeah, I mean, I'm ready. I'm this close.
I doubt you know? It. I'm just playing. Okay, let's pivot into relationship because there were a lot of questions on that. Mm. Firstly, they want us to share our love story to expand them. And then within that, did it feel weird? Well, let's start with this. Did it, because the love story is very brief. We met at a barbecue, but I manifested Max. And I went through all of the steps and I ended up blindly meeting him at a friend's barbecue of a friend I hadn't connected with in forever. It was very by chance. So let's pivot into this. Did it feel weird when I told you that I manifested you, and did you manifest me into your life as well?
Well, why don't you be a little bit honest? You dumped me 3 times.
Well, I did, but we're going to get into that in a minute.
You should be clear to people that it's not like I met Lacey and she was like, I manifested you. I mean, I met her and she was like, let me give you 3 reasons why I'm not going to date
you. Oh, this is
you.
Actually really
yeah.
true. At the barbecue,
yeah.
I did say, because I was doing everybody's charts and reading
I started
charts.
Talking about charts.
Maybe.
That's how I remember it.
Well, and I pulled up Max's, and he has the same birthday as my stepfather, who was amazing, but dragged my mom through a like atrocious, like terrible child custody care battle. And I was like, there is no fucking way we're hanging out. I'm so yeah. afraid of that birthday as a partner. And so I had like done Max's chart and I was like, oh, here from my phone, you can email it to yourself so you have it. And I did that with everybody and Max texted it to himself. But Max is like, I'm going to say this about you. You're ultra Virgo in the sense, like Virgo man, that you went home that night. You added me as a friend on Facebook and you texted me 2 days later. Like you were
broke
manifester.
All the rules.
Yeah. Well, yeah. You just were like impulsive. I know what I want.
Which
I'm
is funny because
I thought that I
had showed a little bit of restraint.
Not at all.
But yeah, no, you were in my crosshairs for sure.
Yeah,
for sure. It was when I remember when you walked in the room, you had my attention. And I wasn't sure. It wasn't sure. It's like, what's up with this? What's up with her?
Mm-hmm.
Like you were beautiful, but you were also a little bit like kind of threat. Like either you were just going to be like either we were not going to jive,
yeah.
or you know, I don't know. I didn't know at that point, but yeah, when I so stealthily extracted your number, you didn't know what was going to happen next.
Well, I did. And I knew I'd hear from you. And then when you did ask me on a date, I even think I responded, well, based on your birthday and that you're a Virgo, I just don't think this is going to work out.
But astrologically sure, we'll profiled.
Totally. Astrologically profiled.
Shut down. Why? We're not even going to bother.
And I knew that you were 3 years younger and I was looking for something very serious. And just based on societal programming, I was like, there's no way this younger guy is going to be interested in all of these bigger things at this age. So I already had a bias about you.
Ageism.
So I profiled you astrologically and had ageism. But when you did come to get me for the date, you were such a boss. And that really blew me away to anybody else. I mean, I had been going on dates with like 45-year-olds who like were Academy Award nominated editor, you know, like just crazy things. And they didn't present as confidently, interestingly, and really, really in their, how do I want to say it? Like they weren't as polite and I don't know. You just really showed up like a boss. And I was like, well, this person's interesting. You really caught my attention then.
Then why'd you dump me a week later?
So based on tests, you at one point, and I'll be really honest, we had just hooked up. We'd been to, you know, dating and we nothing crazy, but we had hooked up and then you didn't reach out the next day. And I was like, oh, he's really not serious. Fuck him. He's gone.
Boy, if you only knew what happened to me that night.
I know. And then I got the story and I was like, okay, I'll give you another shot. The first time was on your birthday.
Yeah, you dumped me on my birthday.
2 weeks later after I met
Correct. Because
you sent a text that felt like kind of presumptuous, like flirty.
I had a really great time last night.
No, it wasn't that. It was something else.
For my record.
And I was like, I don't think this is going to work. Goodbye. And then our friend Yelena.
Yeah, no. And by the way, just like that.
On your birthday.
Gone. Yeah, done. Yeah.
The second time was, you know, weeks later was this.
Well, why
thing.
Don't you be a little bit honest? Who came crawling back?
I did. I reached out. I got the ping where I was like, maybe I should hang out with this person longer.
She was fact checking me with other people.
I was getting your references. Sure.
She came back. And that was great because I was like, oh.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you were afraid.
Like, well, I got to go to New York for a week. Why don't we reassess this after New York?
Yeah, you did put the brakes on because you were really afraid.
Yeah. No, I was because it was hot and heavy. It wasn't safe.
Because
you pushed me away.
True. So the second time I've already spoken about, and what was the third? I don't remember the third.
It happened.
Well, probably something
I think it
like
happened
this.
In New York.
Really?
Yeah.
I can't remember.
It happened. We'll get back to you on that.
Yes.
One,
so now,
sure. Three
moving,
times. Jump.
And then we were pretty like, there was a point you told me you loved me after a couple of months. And I was like, okay, I know that this is safe. And you knew it was safe.
I remember that moment really vividly. Yeah.
Kind of. Well, we went to go see. No, I mean, what's ever really safe?
There's no such
new
thing. And it sucks.
Yeah, it sucks until you get to really know the intimacy in depths. But back to the manifestation question, did it feel weird when I told you I manifested you? And I showed you the list. I took a photo and sent you the list. Mm-hmm. And did you manifest me as well? That's the question.
Well, I can't relate to the clear vision. I didn't have a bullet point list of who this person was. I mean, I was more just kind of like, you know, the universe can do like dealer's choice, you know, but I think that emotionally, I was at a point in my life where I was ready for love. Mm-hmm. I really was. I'd been 3.5 years sober. You know, I'd really learned how to start to love myself, which was, you know, a really challenging process. But I think, and there was so much energy. There was so much going on, a new business. I mean, there was so much energy and it's really inspired. And yeah, I think the combination of those two things of, you know, having done a lot of spiritual work and being okay with myself, I think I was finally in a position to really receive love. Even though, love is a big word. I still don't understand what it really means, mm-hmm. you know, and I think it has to start with me. I got to love myself before, you know, I can love others. And so I think that, you know, my concept of love is kind of ever growing, but, you know, before there would be like very transactional things about like, you do this for me, so that's why I love you, or X, Y, and Z. And it's like, I don't know. I had done so much work and I was open and just saying like, maybe that openness was saying, I don't really know what love is, but, you know, being willing to try and let it into my life. Because that's not normal for me. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a lot easier for me to isolate and control and build up a barrier to, you know, hide from other people rather than let them in and be vulnerable. That's my natural state.
But talk about Oroville, because you were intentional.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I was just gushing because I had just come back from an amazing trip through southern India. And I had gone into this crazy meditation chamber. And I remember quite vividly going like, okay, like I'm turning it over to the universe, mm-hmm. you know, not at, you know, as specifically, but just saying like, I, you know, I'm ready to have love in my life.
Mm-hmm. And that was just weeks before we met.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'd say that we manifested each other. But
you need to tell people to look up Machi Mandir too, because that is like the coolest.
Yeah, explain it for people who are curious.
It's a giant geodesic gold leaf dome with a large crystal ball that's like the size of a Mini Cooper that direct sunlight is reflected into and lights up a meditation chamber.
Yeah,
I mean, it was like I've had my fair share of psychedelic experiences, but stone cold sober, it was an out of body experience for sure.
Yeah. I want to go. I know. I chickened out of our trip this year because I didn't feel like my body was strong enough for India.
It will be one day.
Yeah. Poor Max. That was a hard thing because we were going to go for your birthday and you love it. How do we feel about love languages? So Max and I are so complicated because our love languages are completely different.
You just say that.
It's the truth. Max is definitely, his is like, I can't even think of it. That's the worst part.
You were gesturing it.
Yeah, physical affection.
Yeah, I'm just like Barley.
He loves to just be like scratched or like rubbed or anything.
And if we were honest, you speak Barley's love language
I do because she doesn't speak and that's terrible that I'm... It's all my childhood and stuff, the way I was raised. That it wasn't very affectionate. Super Irish and stuff. And then mine are gifts, which you're great at. You're good at my love languages. Gifts and words of affirmation. But I'm so Aquarian and just like did not come from strong affection that I really resist all. Poor Max will ask me like, can I just have scratches when we're watching movies? And I'll be like, I'm so bad at it and so selfish.
But when you do, they're great.
Thank you. I'm trying harder. Yeah. And then your other ones are to help you. What's that? What is it called to help you when, you know, it's like.
Well, I mean, I do believe that, you know, like the physical connection and that's not like specifically sex.
No,
like
it's, you're way more driven by work than sex. That's a good thing, I think. I mean, you're both, you're balanced, but it's like our relationship is not, for the person who's listening, that's like all men are about sex and this and that.
Yeah, I mean, we're not having sex like four times a day. It's not like a softcore porno movie at our house.
It's not the basis of our relationship. It's a glue, it's a connector, it's an aspect, but I think what makes us so compatible and work so well is we are both so motivated and driven by work and that we support each other through that in a lot of ways.
And it has its, you know, the pendulum swings absolutely both ways. There is that aspect of us where it's like, it's really hard to have a relaxing day.
Yeah. Very
hard. It
really is.
Like we both share that in common when we're like the idea of being in bed past 11:30.
We just cannot. Yeah, it's so depressing.
Like give me a panic attack.
Yeah.
And so sometimes it can be really hard for us to just sit with ourselves.
And on travels, it's very hard with that as well.
But you're asking about like the specific like love language,
or just what are our thoughts on it? We believe in it.
Yeah.
We're aware of it.
Well, I mean,
we're trying.
Yeah.
We're trying to like speak each other's better, but we don't live by it or anything. We're just, it's another system that we're both very aware of. Yes.
I mean, you have accountability now.
I do. Oh, man.
Others have. I believe there's some other people in your network that have been vocal supporters of me getting more back scratches. And to any of you that have suggested that, I thank you from the bottom of my heart.
What is your advice for making a relationship flourish? This is loaded. I mean, it's just a big topic.
It's a big question. What is my advice to making a relationship work?
Because Max is far better at keeping us together than I am. Because I have,
so?
Oh yeah, I have so much trauma.
Yeah, you threaten to leave a lot.
Yeah.
You do.
Yeah.
Remember the Dolly Parton concert?
That's when I broke up with you the last time.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, that was one.
And those were great tickets too.
Yeah. The Hollywood.
And you really wanted to go.
I did.
Oh, it's because I was late.
Yeah, it was
late.
If
by about like 25 minutes.
No, I have a huge trigger from childhood of people, me having to always be responsible because nobody following through with their word. And so Max had a huge issue. To him, it was no big deal being a few minutes late for things. And it triggered that for me. This was before we started Imagoing. This was very early on. And so you did it so many times that to me, it equated that you didn't respect me. I'm a doormat. And so that's when I was like, no way, you're out. I'm gone. I'm definitely not going to the Dolly Parton concert. Go sell them on Craigslist.
Like, we went though.
We did go and it was great. Yeah. But that's another tool that we love. We really have that in our tool belt. We don't use it every day or anything, but we do certainly use it for communication is the Imago, which I share
it's
a lot.
It's hard.
It's very hard.
It's really hard to do that when you're emotionally charged.
Absolutely.
I find it like really difficult. It's really hard to put things through that kind of filter. I believe you asked me a pretty direct question and I've been thinking about it simultaneously while we were recalling that story. And I honestly think that, you know, in terms of the relationship, it has to start with you. It has to. Mm-hmm. I have to go to great lengths spiritually to remain, you know, like I was talking about earlier, like open and willing. And, you know, I have to be in that state to be able to show up, to be able to be accepting, to be able to, you know, come from a place of love. And unfortunately, I can't give that to you and you can't really give that to me.
Totally.
You know, maybe that's some secret sauce. And what we have going on is that we both, you know,
are 100% autonomous, like autonomously complete within ourselves.
Yeah.
Before we.
And and going to great lengths to be so. Because I don't think that I can control other people.
Same.
Or no, I'm sorry. Let me rephrase that. On my best day, yeah. I don't think I can control other
people.
Or
we have a knowing that we can't, but we work hard in order to practice a life where we don't try because we know it's not effective.
And it's my first instinct to control you.
Mm-hmm. Vice versa, yeah.
It's my first instinct to go like, no, this is how it should be, or, you know, X, Y, like, that's my first instinct. Mm-hmm. It's the nature of me kind of being a selfish, you know, scared human being. So I think that there's the independence and the strength in myself, you know, because there's been some times where it's like, it could be my shit or it could be your shit, you know, and when I try and throw my shit on you, it's not productive.
Totally.
I have to disengage. Mm-hmm. I have to go and go about, you know, my spiritual practice, whether that's like going to a meeting or, you know, running 7 miles, you know, like whatever it may be, you know, it's like I have to work on myself before I can show up to our relationship on my best foot. Because left to my own devices, I'll control, manipulate, you know, become resentful, become judgmental. I mean,
same. And I think I'm far more susceptible to it than you. I think I act out more because of my health issues, because I don't have as much energy or what we know on days that I'm not balanced. Mm. That's when you're getting most of those attributes out of me, even though I work very hard at being completely autonomous, as do you.
You know, the good news and the bad news is that it's a lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, fuck.
Totally.
It can feel overwhelming sometimes that, you know, as a human being, you know, like these are the things that I need to do to, you know, get out of bed each day.
Mm-hmm.
And my, you know, like I said, put my best foot forward. It can feel like a lot. And sometimes it doesn't have sometimes it doesn't have instant results, which can be really frustrating too. Like, what the fuck?
I think it's really important for the person listening, though, to know that both of us aren't like working on ourselves all day so that you don't feel overwhelmed. It's not that at all. We've found what works
but
so
no,
far.
But we are, but that could be 2 minutes.
Totally. It's like morning practices we
have. Yeah, and then like I was talking about earlier, too, it's just practice.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter if it's an hour.
Going on a walk.
If you have the ability to do it for an hour, awesome. If you have the ability to do it for 30 seconds, fantastic. You know what I mean? I just think that, and the reason why I say this is to remind myself that it's just practice. Mm-hmm. That's all. I mean, I think that's all it is.
I agree.
So I'm quickly interrupting this incredible conversation, which I'm sure is bringing massive expansion your way, to share that this is a little secret offering just for you guys who are loyally tuning into this podcast. You won't find this on the blog or social media or anywhere else, but we're offering you 10% off with the code EXPANDED. That's capital EXPANDED. To sign up for any course on our site and receive 10% off. And so that goes for the formula in magnetism. If you're sitting there wondering how exactly do I manifest, it's your step-by-step process. It also goes towards any of the Unblock series, all of which I always like to say help to pump up your magnetism, with Reparent and Shadow being the most important that every manifester should treat themselves to. And also the roadmaps, which are for the people who are just joining in and don't have the luxury of being able to have a session, or for the people who want to take the programs they already have far deeper in a way more navigated terrain. So enjoy that code, EXPANDED, all caps, and we're so excited to have you as a part of this community. Make sure to also tune in to Supported for extra support weekly when you have questions. Unfortunately, because that's a subscription program, we can't offer a code off on that, but it's there for you and it's cheaper than a pack of gum every month. And I made it that way for myself when I was absolutely broke and had zero support in my life so that it could be accessible for anyone. Last but not least, I hope you're enjoying the episode, and please share any manifestations that are coming from doing these workshops simply using the hashtag FN Manifestations.
What's been our biggest relationship trigger so far? What has been yours, actually, is the question.
The biggest relationship trigger? Mm-hmm. I think they're all there. They just kind of come up at different points in time. You know, I can have abandonment issues, control issues. I don't know how I can answer that question in a meaningful way because they're all triggers.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It all comes up.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that there's an area where it's like, nah, we're good.
Yeah, we got that.
Yeah.
Even with work, when I'm like not feeling my best, I'll be like, you're working too much. Da 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 da. I project onto him and he'll do the same onto me. And so
I only do that to rub your face in it because yeah. I was the one who got dumped after a Dolly Parton meeting because yeah. I was 30 minutes late for the office. So when you are working hard, which is inspiring for me, I still have the resentment and the judgment for you that, I mean, you almost blew up our relationship.
Yeah,
over.
At some point I'm like, yeah. You need to go to Workaholics Anonymous. Yeah,
sure.
And I'm the one who like works so hard too.
But let's be honest, I'm also a workaholic.
You are, yeah. I am as well. Yeah, in a lot of ways. So, well, this one's kind of, I don't know, maybe this is helpful for someone out there. I'm like, yeah. I feel humble saying it, but how is it being in a relationship with an emotionally and financially badass woman?
You feel cool saying
I
that.
Don't. I actually feel
you
really
should.
Embarrassed.
You
yeah.
do. How is it?
Yeah, what is it like for you?
What is it like? It's inspiring. It's challenging. It's not just one thing. Sometimes it's really cool. And sometimes I get like, you know, like a secondhand, you know, sense of like confidence and cool that, you know, man, I'll be honest, you know, like I in the past, like when we were first together, when I was talking to people, like, yeah, she's amazing. And they're like, what does she do? She's a blogger, you know? And it'd be like, yeah, dude, she is.
Yeah.
And I've always supported it. And I know, I would think sometimes.
It's also good to clarify, Max met me before I launched Manifestation. You were a big supporter and proponent of me launching this gift that I had. So that's why you would classify me at the time as a blogger.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sorry.
Which I know would be, say, it would be like hard for me. It's like if I'm dating an actor, it's a hard thing to say if they're not, you know what I mean? It's like everyone's a blogger. I get what you're saying for sure.
Yeah. I mean, it's still hard to explain what you do to people or for people. Sometimes I don't even like to try. You know what I mean? I don't. Like, I don't want to put anything into a box. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I think that on my best day, I feel inspired and supportive. And on my worst days, I can maybe feel jealous, or maybe I can feel like I can't, you know what I mean? Since you are this powerful person, I can't control you, mm-hmm. Which can be threatening.
Mm-hmm. Totally. That's an honest answer. I like that. This, I think we should be really honest about, is really good. When did the ping come to propose?
I don't know.
Well, I think we should be honest. I gave Max an ultimatum. Not that he was having trouble with it.
Yeah, but I also made sure to go all the way through that, mm-hmm. right? That wasn't just once. I was there, though.
No. So,
I mean,
like,
we kind of set all that stuff out, like, out, like, on the couch at my house, like, a month dating.
I don't mean, like, you
it
were
wasn't
dragging
like a
your
it wasn't,
feet.
I did drag a little bit, though, and I was nervous, and I was, once it became this thing, mm-hmm. like, I might have fucking proposed to you on the couch when mm-hmm. we were having that conversation. I mean, that's where I was at.
Which
at
was,
that
like,
time.
6 weeks in. Yeah, I just said, yeah, I want, mean, a family.
Yeah, I was like, okay, cool, let's do it now. I might have done it right then and there, but when it became this thing, it got kind of inflated, and it made me nervous, and I didn't have control over it, and, you know, do it. And then it just kind of happened. And mm-hmm. I did it. It got kind of sloppy at the end, which is cool and, like, perfect in its own way. It was, like, in a parking lot. And
in Big Sur.
I was like, I'm not going to do this to you in public.
I would have died if you – oh, my God. I would have
going back, yeah. If, you know, if I really had the stones, I would have, like, been wearing a headset like this and sang a song to you.
Oh, my God. I would have fucking – like, that's it. I would have been dead.
Yeah.
Dead. I would have died out of embarrassment. No, it was perfect. It was absolutely perfect. And after you did like, you were all on board with it.
Yeah.
Totally. How do you balance your creative work and being in a committed relationship?
I don't know. It's hard. Mm-hmm. I don't, I can't answer that question succinctly. Like, I have a recommendation for it. I mean, I'm still trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
It's really challenging.
I think so too. Very challenging. It's a day. It's like one day at a time, truly.
Yeah. Awesome. And, you know,
because, like, I'm too fried sometimes when you come home to be kind, you know, you're same. You're running three businesses right now. There's, like, moments where we're just finding our footing every day.
Yeah.
Truthfully, I think a family is going to be what will slow us down to prioritize.
Yeah.
Stuff.
And you know what? And now that I think about it, you know, like, in this conversation, it's kind of one of those things too. It's like, you know, when people talk about meditation or when they talk about these other things, people get this really complicated idea, like it's supposed to be this, like, prolific thing. And that hasn't been my experience.
Same.
Like, when using the word, like, creative, like, it comes in, like, little stints, and it's, like, there sometimes, and sometimes it's not, and I can't just, like, call on it, like, I'm going to be creative. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's, like, there's this, I get these little, they're pinks,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know? And they're, like, you know, it's not, like, dial-up internet download, you know, like, with the long bar. I mean, they're, like, you know,
lightning.
They're quick. Yeah. And then most of the time, it's just kind of excavating them out from mm-hmm. the other thoughts that, you know, pile on top of it.
Wait, with that, I think it's actually really good. Can you talk about your manifestor when you get the ping, or to use their terminology, the impulse? Because you're really good at carrying through. Can you tell us your process in that? Like, what the thoughts are that
there
come
is,
up?
There is.
Well, think about the manifestor who feels inhibited in that way. What would you say?
You won't be for long.
No, that's not fair, because many women manifestors I know especially have a trouble with this.
There's tons of things that are inhibited. There's a million things that I want to do. Mm-hmm. There's just the three or four things that I pursue because the door's open. Mm-hmm. I mean, if I were to be honest, like my appetite, I'm totally, you know, insatiable in that sense. I mean, I'm doing, you know. So, I don't want to say that in a way. I say that to reinforce people that, you know, to pursue the things that are directly in front of them, and I, you know, God willing, more will come. Mm-hmm. So, no, and the process for me, I mean, you just have to show up. Mm-hmm. I show up. I think that's the one thing, you know, you hear about it and you read about it, you know, like your news feed sends you all these things, and it's like the 10 successful character attributes of, you know, whatever type of people. And I think that the one that I relate to, that I'm grateful for, is that I'm just persistent. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm just persistent, you know, through thick and thin. Someone's got to tell me to go home.
Yeah, you are.
I'm just going to show up, you know, and I'm going to do my best, you know, and half the time I don't even know what I'm doing, but because I show up and because I try and remain teachable, you know, things are happening. Mm-hmm.
This is a good pivot. What was your background prior to starting Older Brother? Or wait, before that, I even want to plant the seed. How long have you known that you've wanted to work in fashion and have a store?
Oh, you know the answer to that.
You need to tell it to people.
I knew it from the gate. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, skateboarding, that kind of exposed me to culture through clothing. Mm-hmm. And that was enough.
Well, I think
it goes even further than that.
Can you talk about your first Nike installation in kindergarten?
Well, I mean, I it wasn't trademarked. I could get sued.
I mean, it's tricky, but I think it's worth unveiling. You,
my
people.
Project in kindergarten, yeah. where we basically made Nike knockoff. They were sandals too.
Like Jesus sandals?
Well, you know what? Product's really hard to make, so it was terrible. It was terrible. But
like out of felt? What were they?
Yes, wow. Yes. And, because that was the only thing readily available within the little kindergarten. But the installation and the retail was, I'm still proud of it. I think it's like,
well, you,
I'm still trying to one-up that. So I forget what those wood logs are called. They're not the Lincoln logs, not the small ones.
Yeah, but they were big building.
Yeah,
ones.
They're like these ones, right? Yeah. So I had kind of made this structure and made cubbies inside that structure and put flashlights in there so that the shoes were like in like these glowing boxes. So you'd go into the little structure and it was like this, you know, man, I haven't thought about this in a long time, but.
But you like put flashlights to backlight
them. Yeah, no,
it was all
lit up, and I mean, I think about it where it was like, damn, that was
solid.
Yeah,
and even like his mom talks about the cutest things growing up. Anybody who's familiar, Whitney Goodman had a store in Portland that a lot of people loved, and she was a great family friend. Even she would gift him like nice corduroys when they were little, because that's how everybody knew Max was really into fashion.
Yeah.
It's been with you since literally birth.
Yeah. And I guess I don't think about it so much just because it's just kind of part of something that I've always found interesting. So mm-hmm. It's not like I've been like, huh, what's the cause of that? I've just existed like that for a long time. So it's just kind of what I know.
And then what was your background prior to Older Brother? What did you do?
Well.
Or how did it all start is actually a really good way. In LA.
It all started.
Or your career, I mean.
I mean, if that's what you want to call it. So I went to the Art Institute for San Francisco for a summer. And I mean, school at that point was just like brutal. It wasn't the way that I learned things. So I showed up for that. I ended up, you know, transferring down to LA. And that was brutal. It wasn't a positive experience for me. And I remember I was on La Brea and I met this dude that was sewing jeans in a store. He was sewing like custom jeans in a store. And I just got entrenched with that. I was like, "What can I intern for you? Mm-hmm. Can I, you know?" And I got involved, and that, you know, quickly grew.
And you were a custom denim repairer at the
time. Yeah. Oh no, we were making jeans too by hand in a store. It was interesting.
And I think super important to expand people that you dropped out of school after a year. You were like, "Fuck it, I'm going to go to the real world and actually get an education."
Yeah. Well, and you know, keep in mind too, I'm a full-on drug addict at this point. So
school wasn't like amazing.
Yeah. And I'm interested and driven, but I'm also, you know, incapacitated, mm-hmm. you know, by any sense of the word. So yeah, I mean, that was my introduction into the industry. And from there we had launched a brand and had been doing, I don't know, so much. And I got, I mean, at this rate, I'm just entrenched in it. Mm-hmm. You know, that's like what I did. And I learned it as a trade. I learned it, you know, as a way to take an idea from an idea to product and then from a product to made goods. And that kind of became a skill set. And I had a, you know, a resource of places and abilities to do that. So I had unsuccessfully tried to start my own line and doing like a, you know, kind of a documentary short simultaneously with it. But keep in mind, I had left that company. I'm 20 years old and completely strung out mm-hmm. trying to start a company, mm-hmm. you know, and doing.
That was called FMK?
No, I don't even want to say the name
of it. Okay, okay. But your mom's very proud because Rihanna bought a pair of yours.
No, that was later.
Oh, okay.
That was sober.
Oh, okay.
Sober things started to open
up.
Oh,
I see. Okay, sorry.
No. This is just, you know, just like sheer willpower trying to do it. But yeah, so I forgot where I was. Yeah, so I'm 20. You know, I'm doing deals, like helping, you know, trying to help people start other product lines. I'm just immersed in it.
Can I interrupt you on
yeah,
that?
Sure. 'Cause
I think it's really important for people who are curious about fashion, because a lot needs to go into it. And I think talking about how you had to make your bread and butter in order to put these lines out there through private labeling, that's what I think you're talking about, helping other people.
Yes. So that would be... like, how do I describe? I've been doing, you know, kind of design and production work for hire since I was 20 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, helping people, you know, go from point A to point B with an idea or a product. And I've had the fortune of doing that for other great clothing brands to, you know,
celebrity
merchandise, you know, whatever. And yes, I do believe thoroughly that, you know, in pursuit of these things, you know, like specifically with older brother, it's going to take a while.
And money.
And it's going to take money. And you need to survive and you need to thrive as you go about these things. You know, I have not stopped doing that as a means to live comfortably and to, you know, also just kind of stay in perpetual motion. I don't like things to be stagnant.
I think
to kind of, you know, continually be in that process. And it comes up in a lot of different ways and shapes and forms, some cool, some not, some, mm-hmm. you know.
I think it's so important too for the people listening who are familiar with my manifestation process, this is what's called the bridge job. Uh-huh. It's the stuff on the side. You know, it's not only is it a bridge job, the things like you've been private labeling, you know, forever, and now you're starting to take on other businesses that help on the side while you're continuing. I mean, the brand's doing great, but so that you can also thrive as an owner.
Yeah.
And I think what's really cool about the bridge career you've had and job is that it's also given you incredible contacts. You've learned immense amount of skills that have now funneled into your company, of where you don't have to make as many mistakes or you have contacts. And it really, it's like kind of super speed of business world for you, it seems like, from my perspective on the outside.
Well, the reality is that it's been painful, sloppy, and hard along the way.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that, you know, I also, too, just I have a lot of energy, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? And, you know, exercising patience, you know, with what I'm pursuing now can be difficult.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think it's very critical to my idea, or what somebody kind of explained to me, is like, you just got to stay in the ring.
Mm-hmm.
You really do. Things can take time, and you need to be in a position to continue to show up.
Mm-hmm.
you know, and there's been challenging times where I've seriously considered, you know, just, but the more I was able to show up, the bigger and the deeper things continue to go.
And when you say show up, you're meaning like spiritually, clarity, financially.
Well, I mean, like you can rearrange those. Number one being financially.
Yeah. Totally.
Right.
Can you talk about that a little bit for the person who does want to start a brand, of what that actually looks like, pending on the different levels? Because I know a lot of people are always inspired, like, I want to start a clothing line. Can you just talk about what that logistically, financially looks like? Because you've helped other brands.
Yeah,
you've done it yourself.
It's a lot. I mean, you have to start. You have to start in a manageable way. And I would say it's more of a building process through and through. You have to start somewhere. You have to kind of shape around that. You have to kind of figure out, because what you think you can do at first and what you think it's ultimately going to be is going to constantly change. So, I'm a proponent of people kind of, you know, having a starting point and kind of building from there. And in terms of financials, you could spend millions of dollars on a startup, or you could spend $5,000. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? There's a vast range. It's depending on like what you're doing and what you're trying to accomplish. I'm a proponent of starting and then starting the building process.
Starting small and starting.
Correct. Correct. And especially like if you're not coming from apparel, you got a lot to learn.
Yeah, a lot. People don't realize that.
You have a lot to learn. I think that's why, I enjoy it so much, as not only from a creative standpoint, but a business standpoint, is that it's the perfect intersection of artistic expression and commerce and business. Mm-hmm. Because you have to deal with so much. You're creating product, you're the strategy through mm-hmm. from the strategy about, how you're gonna create product, meaningful product, and the strategy of how you're gonna grow in a meaningful way is can be all consuming and really fun. I don't know if I answered your question.
Yeah. I think that's helpful for people to just preemptively know, I think is really good for people. And are you guys open for people reaching out if they're looking for expanders, for interns? Like, are you open to that? And I know you have a store that you'll be looking for employees on and off throughout the time. Are you open to people reaching out who are like, I want to be
an expander? Yeah, of course. I mean, I think that's one of the things that's really fun about the industry in general is it's, the idea of being inclusive and working with other people and, kind of having a company creates that opportunity, which is really satisfying for me, at least.
I guess this is sort of what we just covered, but what's your advice for someone interested in starting their own company in general?
I think I answered that. I think that you have to start somewhere.
Yeah.
And you also have to make a lot of mistakes, and you have to show up, and your conception and the way that you think about it now is going to change. And so you need to be there. You need to make it, you need to, have some form of, manageability. And it can be difficult for me to answer that, because the way that I go about it, it is much more impulsive, right? Like, let's do that. Let's figure it. Just show up. I'll take risk. If I were to answer that question directly, I would say that you need to pick a starting point, and depending on like what your resources are and what you're in a position to do. If if you're gainfully employed and still have time to pursue this, or whether you have a little bit of time and it's just something that's gnawing away at you, start. Mm-hmm. That's all I have to say. Mm-hmm. Start, and start somewhere, mm-hmm. and don't start in a way that threatens
making mistakes.
Well,
like
that threatens your security.
Oh, absolutely. That's
right?
Huge with this.
Yeah.
You have to have a fuck you fund, have a bridge job.
Yeah,
like
for
that.
Sure. Yeah, and you go about it, and as the more it becomes a reality, the you go at it even harder.
I agree. How have you kept your values? I mean, you're covering this a little bit, the same as when you started Older Brother, or how have they manifested into different things?
They were there, and they're always there. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the foundation of the company. That's the fun part of the company.
Can you talk
really
about them a little bit?
The values. Mm-hmm. We started out with a goal. The idea was that we were going to create product that could be buried in its backyard. Mm-hmm. And I think that it built from there to where the challenge shaped the process, right? When we're doing this and when we're working on something, you know, our starting point is really difficult because it's like, you know, can we get this material? Can we achieve this color? Can we do this? Can we do that? Mm-hmm. They're not, it's not like we're just ordering these things off a line sheet, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? And just picking a pretty color. The whole process, you know, is so immersive and so engaging. And it starts from that fundamental idea of, can we do this or not? Mm-hmm. You know, once, you know, kind of the ideas are percolating, and it's always this opportunity to say, like, can we do this? And mm-hmm. can we do it the way that we want to do it? Mm-hmm. I feel like it can be like asking a chef, it's like, why do you use, you know, organic food mm-hmm. for somebody who's like a, you know, slow, someone who's immersed in the slow food culture, it's like, because it's the best, mm-hmm. because it's cool, mm-hmm. because it's challenging. Yeah. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
That's how I see Older Brother, truthfully. They're like collector's item pieces. They're like art that you'll have forever because there's such a few quantity and so
for
much.
For now.
Well, yeah, that's why they're still such collector's items mm-hmm. that they, and seasonally, they're so specific. They've been made with a very specific type of ingredient. I mean, they truly are a collector's item. They're a piece. Mm. I have seasonal pieces that are collector's items. Mm. How do you deal with financial hurdles in business? Because you guys just did a round of seeking investors.
Ugh. I mean, there's how do we do it? Any which way we can. They are constantly, I mean, we're going through them right now. It's constantly a challenge. You know, you use that word bridge. It's constantly trying to create the opportunities to continue to grow when, you know, volume of scale and the economics of that are brutal. Mm-hmm. It's a puzzle every single day. If I had an easy answer for that, then we wouldn't be having this conversation. So I think it's I think it's something that's really challenging, and I think that it requires patience and strategy.
But you guys have been securing it, so it's been successful. Yeah. What would be your three tips to somebody trying to secure some sort of...
Oh, it's probably going to take a long time.
Okay.
It's the most important thing you could be doing, mm-hmm. specifically for apparel. And you got to kiss a few frogs before one turns into a prince.
Like you will get rejected a couple of times.
Yeah.
And yeah, I love totally. That. People need to know that. That's really special. And sometimes you're going to just have to ask your family and shit. Yeah, like you're going to have to scrounge
by,
up the people
by
you
any
know.
Means necessary.
Find money.
Yeah.
How did you deal? I don't know if you came up against this, but I'm sure you've had doors shut on you when you have been.
All the time.
Yeah.
All how the time. Do you it's guys, fashion. The people yeah. are very, you know, doors close all the time.
How do you guys deal with people who didn't believe in the brand when you first started the business?
We
kept your head up and kept going, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, you just don't invest much time with those people. There's people that are going to be supportive and there's people that aren't. And you can usually tell. And sometimes there's been circumstances where people are like, I don't really get it. And then they get it. And that's cool. Welcome aboard. You know, you do your best and you just keep going. You go where the love is.
What I want you to talk about for a minute, because I think it's really cool for people to know the vintage-inspired aspects of each of the different seasons. Because like some carryovers, like the chore coat is a staple that's always there. Mm-hmm. I want you to just talk, because I love that aspect of it, that there's like these truly quality, re-inspired vintage cuts.
So yeah, I mean, I would say that part of our collection is built on, you know, referencing that. And it's cool when you find something, you know, that's just like this... that has this special like antiquity that vintage can have, and you take it and you figure out a way to extract that and put it through the filter of OB, you know what I mean? To put it like we do a lot of stuff where we take a lot of sharp angles out of clothing so that it's more inviting, you know, about how the silhouette falls, kind of pushing the balance of it. You know, it's those kind of things that it's cool to have something where it's like vintage sometimes can be so meaningful because mm-hmm. they're like these things that have existed through long periods of time, and you find them and you have this relationship with them and you're like, oh.
And their quality.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're just striking. And so to take those things and to, you know, basically they're inspiring. Mm-hmm. So to have that inspiration and have it transition into something that's like new and meaningful and it kind of has like the flavor, it can be really fun. That's a very fun part of the process, definitely.
What would you say about the brand that makes it different for the person who's just stumbling onto Older Brother for the first time? Because there's nothing like it out there.
Yeah, I don't want to say those things in a way that, like, you know, comes off as like egotistical. But yeah, I mean, we're really trying to push the envelope. Mm-hmm. We're really trying to give this exploration of design and process and storytelling. We're trying to get people to engage on a different level and on a way that's experiential. Like, you know, I've said this a few times in the interview now, but the idea of slow food is amazing. Mm-hmm. Because when you go there, it's all about this experience and where things come from and the context of them. And so, you know, that's something that, you know, through and through with our product, it's there. Mm-hmm. Everything has a very specific intent behind it. And it comes together in this way that I think we're both really proud of. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like when we choose, you know, a process for the season and the story, it just builds in this organic way. And it puts a lot of intention behind the product that's sitting on the shelf. And I think that it's been a really positive experience to hear people come in and physically see product, especially now that we have a store in Venice, and be like, wow, this is so cool mm-hmm. in person. Mm-hmm. It's one thing to see it online. It's another thing to touch and see the nuances of the product.
And try it on.
Yeah. So it's really exciting. And it's also very exciting to have, you know, to be at this point where we'll be able to build a physical experience for the brand. I mean, we're all in. Mm-hmm. We've got all the senses now. Mm-hmm. And so it's very fun. It's really inspiring. And it's like, it's just at the stage where it's so cool. I'm really proud of like where we are and what we can do from now on.
What's your favorite piece for the season for a man and a woman?
A man and a woman?
Yeah, like what's the favorite?
The blazer I gave you that you didn't wear on the
podcast.
I know,
I can't believe I didn't wear it today. I'm so sad. We're staying at a hotel right now.
I've been having like a low-key like fetish with blazers for the last 2 years. And we have one that's actually made from rice paper. It's called washi and wool. So they blend their rice paper and wool together. And
it's amazing.
Yeah, and we'll bring that over from Japan. And when we do our semi-tailored stuff, like the suiting and the trousers like that, we'll actually take those big blocks of wool and we'll panel dye them. So we roll them out into panels and cut the panels and dye the panels, you know, separately from the garment and then cut from that. So, I mean, it's just a really intense process and it makes such like a, I don't know, I just think it's a really beautiful piece. And yeah, I think that from the standpoint of, it checks the box of being like, you know, truly sexless as a garment. Like mm-hmm.
Amazing with even the collar.
Yeah, I mean, and you kind of like, I like to wear mine like wrinkled up, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? And kind of like, you know, a little bit shrunken and stuff. And you're like wearing it with like the collar. It doesn't even look like a blazer. Mm-hmm. It looks like a utilitarian military jacket. Yeah. So it's cool.
I can't wait to wear it in Scotland because it's the perfect Scottish green.
Yeah, it is. It is. There was a lot of inspiration during that last trip. Up in the Highlands.
Where can we find the store?
566 Rose Avenue, Venice Beach.
All the hippies know? It's in relation. It's right by Moon Juice. It's across it.
Right by Moon Juice. It's pretty close to Rama too, right?
Yeah. Well, it's across from Moon Juice over to the left. It's close to Parachute Home.
Yeah.
It's right on Rose. And where can we find you online and on Instagram?
Olderbrother.us and Olderbrother US.
At Olderbrother.us on Instagram. Thank you for coming today and being vulnerable and being seen because it's hard. We're grateful.
Thanks for having me.
I love you.
You too.
Bye. Thank you so much for joining today. And if today's episode piqued your curiosity about manifestation, head over to freeandnative.com and click on Start Here, where you'll find a video of me giving you all of my recommendations of how to navigate manifestation from here on out. And again, if you liked it, please comment below, review, and share with a fellow manifester. And if you're looking for the like-minded community that you might be manifesting, head over to our Facebook group called The Secret Society. You can find that on our homepage. And make sure to sign up for our newsletter, where we send out new manifestation content and how to digest it and put it into practice twice a month. Have a beautiful day.